The Warrior Soul Podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppinfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. You know, you never quite know where you're going to end up when you take a path. You could end up in some place that is going to be completely different than what you ever thought. And, you know, it's a funny thing about life. And that's one of the cool things about life. You could be somewhere completely different 5 years from now than you ever thought you would be. I never thought I'd be living in California. I grew up on the East Coast. I live on the edge of the desert, a climate that is completely foreign to me. And life has taken me some interesting places. For instance, I never thought I'd be speaking into a microphone that's connected to a plastic box that is then going to generate my voice out to a bunch of people whom I've never met, but I feel a very close affinity to, right? And it's interesting because you kind of have to take those chances if you are going to get those kinds of surprises in life. If you don't take chances, if you don't take risks, well, life's always going to be what it is. But the reason why I'm thinking like this is because today's guest really makes me think in those terms. Mike Keevil enlisted in the United States Marine Corps Reserves as a food service Marine. And that's an interesting story in and of itself. He's one of these guys, he wanted to be a chef. And when he was a kid, he was at a gas station. He saw a friend of his who enlisted in the Marine Corps, and he was working for the recruiter at the time. And the guy was like, "Hey, what are you doing with your life?" And he was like, "Well, I'm going to go be a chef." And being a recruiter, he said, "Well, the Marine Corps got some of the best chefs in the world," right? I think we've all heard that story. But anyways, Mike enlisted as a food service Marine. And then he ended up deploying actually with Mortuary Affairs. And if you haven't listened to that Jocko podcast, he had a Mortuary Affairs Marine on, and that was just a great show. And that's some tough work that those Marines do. But Mike, after doing a deployment with Mortuary Affairs, decided that he wanted to become a recon Marine. So when he got back, he transferred over to the 4th Recon Battalion and he went through basic recon school, the basic recon course. And then he came back as a recon Marine and started deploying with them. I believe he deployed to Afghanistan, and he's done multiple deployments since then. Mike, in his civilian civilian job, works for a DHS agency, and he is serving the country in multiple ways. He's still in the Marine Corps Reserves, serving with 4th Recon Battalion, and we just had a really great conversation because Mike's big work, what he's really known for right now, is his work with the Team Recon Sniper Foundation. And what he does with Team RSF, he's on the shooting team. He's the captain of the shooting team. But they've got a bunch of different sports that they've been putting together, a bunch of different activities. They've got shooting, but they've also got a lot of other really cool stuff. And Mike's just an interesting dude. I wanted to bring him on, talk about his story a bit, talk about Team RSF and the great work they're doing, and just have a really really awesome conversation. And that's essentially what this is. I don't know if you guys like this or not. I try not to be too formal with my questions. I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting in a podcast and somebody's treating it like a firing squad thing where they're just asking questions and then waiting for the answer and then making it super formal, that just kind of bores me. I like having conversations, especially with other Marines. It just makes me feel like back in the day, we're sitting on our packs, throwing a dip in, you know, getting the spitter out, talking about all kinds of really awesome stuff. But yeah, Mike's a great dude. And man, I'm talking too much. Let's get into the conversation with Mr. Mike Keevil of the Team Recon Sniper Foundation. Mike Keevil, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Where are you at right now? What geographic location?
I'm in the communist state of New Jersey.
Oh, I'm in the People's Republic of California.
Awesome.
My mom's a Jersey girl, though. She's from North Jersey, like Newark area. Italian lady. She's a tough lady, though. But they got some great Italian restaurants up in there. Hoboken's a great place. Are you in South Jersey or Central?
I'm in South Jersey, about 20 minutes from Philadelphia.
Oh, nice. Like Tom's River area, that kind of stuff?
That's closer to the shore. I'm like, it's like 19 miles. Gloucester County, Washington Township, Sicklerville.
Interesting. Interesting. So like Pine Barrens kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Well, dude, you know, I'm sure a lot of my audience knows who you are, but could you give just kind of a 3-minute synopsis of who you are, where you've been, and where you're coming from?
Sure. So I run the Team Recon Sniper Foundation pistol competitive shooting team. So I run the administrative side of it, and I help our two other teams as well, Precision Rifle and Team Endurance. I've been doing that for about 3 years. I've been doing the Marine Corps thing for the last, I'll hit 16 this April between, reserve and active duty. I'm a 0326 reconnaissance, Marine. And I also work for DHS. So I get hit twice for, you know, the Marine Net and, other government online quarterly, you know, classes about, you know, OPSEC and stuff like that. So, you know, married for 10 years, 3 boys. You know, so the big thing that brought us together was the nonprofit that I work for, and then meeting a mutual friend, which is what it's all about. So, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Nice, man. Nice. So I know it all started because you wanted to be a chef, right?
Yeah.
Right. So how did you go from wanting to be a chef to joining the Marine Corps?
So I didn't get my college degree until I was 31. And, when I went back to college, I was 28, and, you know, I had to, you know, get the high school transcripts and all that stuff. And I mean, you know, it had been a decade since I cared about any of that or looked, you know, looked into it. And I was, I got my high school transcripts and, I mean, dude, I was awful, awful student, right? When I wanted to be, my grades were A's and F's. I was either about it or not about it.
Yeah.
barely graduated high school. And, you know, and now like remembering, you know, I went to community college cause I didn't have the grades to get to a, you know, to any legit school. And I needed to work. So I started working at a nursing home as a dishwasher. And then I needed to make more money. They had a full-time position for one of the line cooks. So I applied for that and I got it. And then another position to open up to cook for like the staff. So it wasn't like, you know, pureed food or whatever. I was, you know, learning how to make like real food. And I just got really into it. I really enjoyed it. I actually met my now wife, there. So, you know, I just really enjoyed cooking. And then I was like, you know what? I think this is what I want to do. So I started looking into, you know, culinary schools and, you know, and then from, you know, the other podcast, I saw a kid from high school and he had just gotten out of boot camp or MOS school. And I was just instantly envious. And, so I, you know, went to the recruiter's office. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, I cook. I like to cook. That's what I want to do. You know, we've got the finest cooking schools, you know, around. I said, boom, I'm in. And that's how he got me.
So the recruiter said quick. To you, "We have the finest culinary school in the world," right? Something like that.
Not in the world, but he did say this. I said, I was looking at the Culinary Institute of America in New York. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, this is the school I'm looking at. Like, is the DOD, you know, the Marine Corps cooking schools like comparable?" He's like, "Oh, absolutely." I was like, "In, dude."
I was listening to you on another podcast and my girlfriend grew up in 29 Palms, right?
Okay.
And yeah. So we're both sitting there listening to you on this other podcast and we heard you say that. And we both just busted out laughing. Like we were sipping coffee and then like spit it across the room because it was so hilarious. I have a similar story, but I was much more stupid.
Okay.
I was a teenager and I got into powerlifting at a young age.
Okay.
And
nice.
I was doing all this competitive powerlifting, things like that. I ran into a recruiter and, you know, powerlifting is like one of those things. Like you can't become a professional powerlifter or anything like that. So I ran into a recruiter. He's like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I'm like, you know, I'm a powerlifter. I love it. You know? And he's like, "We've got one of the best powerlifting teams in the world. And you can get paid for that." So totally. It's going to be awesome. I'm like, "Jesus Christ, man."
Sign me up.
Yeah. I don't think I deadlifted once the whole time I was in, but yeah. But that's so funny, just the way that happens, man. So you end up joining. How old were you at the time?
I was 19. I turned 19 the day I signed, April 22nd.
Nice.
Yeah.
And did you go to Paris Island boot camp?
Yep. Yeah, went to Paris Island and you know, again, realized very, very quickly that I liked it a lot. You know, and I did go reserve, off the bat, you know, mm-hmm. girlfriend at the time. So that kind of cliche story, I'm not going to go active duty. And, so I'm there and instantly fell in love with everything that was happening. And which is funny to think about in retrospect, but, you know, all about it. And, everything was like, you can't do what you want to do. You know,
right.
You know, the Fallujah's kicking off and I had friends from high school who went and everyone who, you know, from my hometown who joined, like guys would start, you know, it was like this like small click or whatever, you know, we would start talking and I'm like, dude, I want to go do that. I need to go do that. And, you know, it took a long time to find a way out of what I was doing. And, you know, I was at my parents' house. This is like 2 years ago. You know, they live, in north of Philadelphia and I'm there with my wife, my kids, and I'm looking through my closet, you know, like parents always have like your old shit, like in a box or whatever. So I'm looking through it and I found my original package to request to go active duty from my reserve unit. And number one on there was 0311. And then I think it was 0311. And then it was like machine gunner, LAV crewman. And then I had recon as like number four, you know, didn't even know what 0321 was. I just picked the top coolest sounding 03 job fields. And I just, you know, I was looking at this package and honestly, I'm willing to bet that the S1 at the time didn't even submit it. But I just remember being, you know, I was 20 and being like, you know, seeing the wars on TV and being like, how can I not, like, why can't I get over there? Like, what do I need to do, just to be there? And that's how I ended up going.
What year was this, brother?
This is summer 2005.
Okay.
You know, okay. So I went in summer 2006 and then, you know, did the Marine combat training thing, went to cook school, finished all that in like spring 05. And then I just went back to work. I was a fry cook. Actually really enjoyed being a fry cook at the time. And just like not doing anything, but like seeing my friends do stuff and, you know, everyone's deploying. And I'm like, dude, I got to get over there. I got to do something. And then I got a phone call from a friend from cook school, asking if I wanted to go to Iraq. So went and did that.
That was a good time to be a reservist, because if you were in a unit, what you could do is you could shop around for different units that were going to deploy. All right. Cause I got out about 2005 and I started out in the reserves, got activated and then went back to the reserves. And then by that time, my ankle was screwed up. I had to have a reconstructive surgery, but we deployed to Iraq. But the thing is, like, if you were in the reserves at the time, there was all these units on the East Coast that you could choose from that were like, we're going here, we're going to do this, this unit's going to do a UDP, that unit's going to go to Afghanistan, that kind of stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was a crazy time. And also it was MOS dependent, right? Being 3381, not many. You know, so I took the only option that I had. You know, so I was out in California a couple weeks ago for, you know, I'm an instructor at an active duty unit right now for, you know, for reconnaissance Marines getting ready to deploy. And, like the guys are like, wait, hold on a second. Who are you? How are you here? Like, you're a reservist, but you don't seem like a reservist. You know, and spent a lot of time on active duty doing stuff, going here, doing there. Like you said, literally shopping around for 1 to 2 year contracts and then getting bored with whatever that is and coming off orders and finding something else. And then, and you know, coming in and out of the system for the last 16 years, you know?
Yeah. There's reservists out there who have, you know, 5-6 deployments under their belts. I mean, there's a lot of them out there who do, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, there was an insane professionalization, I think, of the reserves and the National Guard throughout those conflicts, just because a lot of them were doing deployment after deployment. Some of them would go, some would be back for a year and then they'd go again. I mean, there was tons of units that were doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great time. It's strange now though. You know, in conventional forces in the Marine Corps post 9/11, it's a weird time. I guess the only thing I could relate it to is the 90s of what we heard, you know, the Marine Corps was like. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is awful.
I went in 1999 and it was a lot of sitting there and doing things that, you know, they contributed to. It's not like it's a different mission, right? It's a mission in readiness. And that's what they would say. And that's where the whole idea for the three block war came from. You know, and we were doing a lot of that kind of stuff where we would train for, you know, peacekeeping missions and things like that. Or there'd be a peacekeeping mission over here. Then there'd be an active combat situation over here. Then there'd be something else, you know, and that's kind of where just reading, you know, reading what I've seen the commandant write, things like that. That's where they're trying to go back to right now, I think, right?
Yes. And the whole readiness thing, like if you're not in it, you know, you think, oh, like maintain readiness. So you think like a lot of hardcore training, and it's not. It's literally like administrative stuff. Are you, you know, and it's weird to think over the years, when guys talk about what you need to do to be ready to go do. Hi, Jer. What's up, bud? Thank you.
That your boy?
Yeah, this is my boy, Jaren. You say hi.
What's up, Jaren? How you doing, buddy?
So when they talk about readiness, I'm like, hey, man, you know, like as a reservist, you do need to be in control of your own admin, medical, all that stuff, because someone's going to mess it up somewhere, someplace, and you're not going to be able to go do what you want to do. But the point I'm trying to make is like, it's not that related to like actual training. It's the bureaucratic red tape of, you know, are your shots up to date? Like, is your will and power of attorney done? Are you, you know, again, medically and administratively qualified to go do what you need to do? And I feel like that's the big thing nowadays. Versus actual training. Like there's this strange risk aversion to things that were like routine, you know, 5-10 years ago. And it's just gotten really, really weird. The last 5 years with, oh, you know, that's, you know, we need to increase the risk mitigation for this, you know, fire maneuver range. And I'm like, it can't be that safe. Obviously, we're gonna do it. You know, we're right. gonna do the best that we can. But we can't put so many restrictions in to where you're not even doing what you're trying to do. So it's just this weird funk going on right now. You know, at least in the circles that I run or that I run around.
You know, one of the things that I like about your story is you started out in food service, which wasn't really where you wanted to be. And then you actively took a role in trying to get someplace else that was more conducive to what your goals were for the Marine Corps, right?
Yes. And you know, I meet a lot of, you know, a lot of guys over the years and like, oh man, like, how do I do this? Like, what do I need to do? And, you know, I'll tell them, no, please. No. Okay. Thank you. You can play with that. Okay. You know, I'll tell them exactly what they need to do. I had to request mass, to get out of my unit. You know, my company commander didn't want to let me go. I requested mass. The battalion commander, he was all about it and let me go. So again, you know, that could have been a simple obstacle that, that someone doesn't want to take the risk of doing. But what I've noticed is it's, and this is a lot more apparent since being or apparent since becoming like a father, you know. I'll tell my sons over and over and over again, hey dude, like don't touch the stove. It's really hot. And what do? They just have to touch the stove. And I think, you know, even looking back at myself, you know, made a lot of mistakes, you know, touched a lot of hot stoves and that's just what has to happen. But I think the big difference is I think a lot of young dudes, they get discouraged, too quickly and they just don't even want to touch the stove anymore, even though all you got to do is touch the stove and more often than not, it, you know, the situation will buff and you'll get what you want. You just have to keep pushing and find the decision maker.
Right.
And you'll get what you want.
Start a relationship with that decision maker. And, you know, you have to be somebody that they know is going to go wherever you're going to go, represent them well and do great things. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the current situation I'm in right now, transferring the unit that I'm in to the unit that I want to go to required a signature from someone at Headquarters Marine Corps. So, I say, hey, I want to do this. What do I need to do? Here's the checklist. Do the checklist. Roger that. I do the checklist. And then they're like, well, we need to clarify if you can actually do this. Okay, who do we talk to? We talk to this guy. Find this guy. Hey, dude, this is what I want to do. Oh, hey, you're good. You know, go do what you want to do. Awesome. So I jumped the gun a little bit because orders didn't come through. But this unit asked me to come out. And, so I paid for my own flight out there. And I was like, you know what? Like, the whole thing will buff. I'll get paid on the back end. So I'm out there, and what ended up happening was the guy from Headquarters Marine Corps, this mass sergeant, who said I could do what I wanted to do, actually couldn't do any of it. And I finally get him on the phone, and he goes, yeah, I don't know who's telling you you can do all this. And I'm like, Mass Sergeant, you did. Like, it's literally in the email chain. Like, you're the guy that everyone is basing their decisions off of. Well, you can't be doing anything that you're doing. You have to, you know, go back to square one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I'll call you back. So I go find, the master guns, the unit that I'm trying to go to. And I'm like, hey, man, like, I ran into this situation. Like, can you help me out? He's like, yeah, absolutely. So he tries getting a hold of this guy, and dude, he's trying to ghost me, and he's trying to ghost everybody. Mm-hmm. And it took 3 E9s to go find this guy and be like, get on the phone right now. And, how many guys, I was talking to the master guns that was helping me, and he's like, you know why I'm going to run this into the ground? Because how many guys you think this dude is fucked over because he can? And, and I didn't really think about it like that. Like, how many guys in my position have 3 E9, well, 2 E9s I can call at a drop of a hat, and then they can go reach out to their E9s to go make this E8 do his job. It's just crazy. But, again, to your point, it's relationships, and it's finding the button pusher.
Exactly.
Do what you want to do.
You know, building a relationship with people, being able to figure out a way to get it done. And, you know, for someone like you who again, you know, you started out in that position and eventually got yourself over to recon. That's pretty awesome that you're able to do that. I've talked to several people on the show. You know, one gentleman, Josh Hansberger, who was an infantry marine, and he wanted to go to MARSOC selection, and he got himself into a situation where his command said, "Okay, we're going to do this for you, but if you don't make it for some reason, you're not promotable anymore." Right. And yeah, no, that's what they said to him. And
of course they said that to him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there's a lot of guys who would be scared off by that. I want to get back to a little bit of your story here, just to clarify for everyone, because I know you deployed the first time to Iraq. And you were with Mortuary Services, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And that was simply to be able to get out of that first unit and then head into to be able to get to a deployable status, right?
Yes, I just wanted to get to Iraq in any way I could at the time, and get out of that unit too.
Right, and I know that's rough work, man. Having to go and collect remains off the battlefield. What was that like for you psychologically?
At the time, the only times I got emotional about it, I got emotional about it in two circumstances. Number one would be, seeing the friends of the fallen angel. That's what we call fallen service members. We call them angels. And, so seeing their friends come up, cause they would come to the shop and they'd be like, hey, can we say something to our friend, before you ship them off to Dover? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So you know, we'll take them back to the reefer and let them do their thing. Kind of like an internal memorial service, you right. know? So that would be one of the times. The other time would be going through their personal effects. Cause you know, we have to catalog everything. And that was difficult. You know, seeing Lucky Charms, seeing photos of family, you know, in Kevlars, in, you know, in breast pockets, stuff like that. But as far as the gore, I mean, it, at the time it didn't register. Like it all, it didn't look real at all. I remember saying this to one of my friends. I'm like, it looks like television looks more real, if that makes sense. Right. So, you know, I was on a plane, you know, on my second deployment. This is after the whole recon thing. And I'm on my second deployment. And I was on a plane next to a former Navy SEAL who he got into veteran nonprofit work, you know, which is what I do now. And he, you know, we're just shooting the shit. And he asked me what I did before. And, you know, and he asked me, got the same question you did. He's like, hey, so like, how was it? I said, no, you know, it's fine. Like, you know, I have gory dreams, but I'm not like waking up, like freaking out or whatever. And he goes, just be careful in your 30s. And, yeah. and I was like 22 at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. You know, I'll do that. And then, you know, fast forward in my 30s and, especially after Afghanistan, like just a lot of things just kind of hit me all at the same time. And I think what he was saying without saying it is like, again, I think it's this weird time after the incident where we naturally just box everything up and we're like, you know what, dude, like this happened and I'm just going to deal with it later because I need to deal with all of this right now. And I think just after a certain point in time of constantly doing that, it just kind of like boxes just start opening up by themselves. Which is a big focus of what we try to do with, you know, Team Recon Sniper Foundation, as far as like a healthy way to open up the boxes that you want to open up. But we need to go through all the boxes. And that's kind of what we try to do.
You know, I mentioning the 30s, I think 30s are a rough time for a lot of veterans because, you know, your 20s are exciting, right? That's when you're out there, you're doing everything. And by the time you get to your 30s and even your late 20s, that's when life starts to slow down. And I think that's when life, you know, a lot of things tend to catch up with you, right? Was that your experience?
Yeah. Yes. 20s are so fast, but you know, blink of an eye. And, right. It was weird. Like I was never in the same place for more than 7 months for all of my 20s. Constantly going, doing things, moving around. And then, when I settled down, you know, 5 years ago, at right around 30, 31, I thought to myself, I'm like, dude, I'm going to be here for the next like 20 years. And that kind of freaked me out, at first, right? Like it was almost like the thrill of looking for a new job, looking for a new opportunity, new adventure. Boom, don't have to do that anymore. And you would think it would be easy to accept that, but it wasn't in the beginning.
Right. So you mean you found your career, you found your job, and you were like, oh man, this is what I'm going to do for the next 20 years. And that whole thing just kind of hit you there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thought of not having to find an adventure, that affected me more than I thought. And I remember specifically thinking that, like, oh man, I don't have to seek anything for a while. Right. And that was a little daunting. you know, and, you know, talking about back to the whole post-war conventional, you know, military life, you know, you mentioned UDP and, you know, a UDP opportunity came up and I hadn't been on one and hadn't deployed in a while. And, I was like, fuck it, man, let's go do that. So I was at a paddle party, for one of my mentors, and, a paddle party is, it's a traditional, ceremony done, where, you know, a bunch of recon dudes like will get together and they will hand make a paddle for, you know, one of their teammates or platoon mates who's either retiring or leaving the unit. And if the guy was worth his salt, you know, you'll decorate the paddle, and then you'll, you know, present it to him, and, you know, everyone's drinking and talking about stories, and, you know, it's a really to receive a paddle is like, that is one of the ultimate, like, hey, like your peers thought, you know, highly of you. It's like, it's unfortunate when just with deployment cycles and just, work life where, you know, a lot of guys get out and they don't get a paddle. You know, but anyway, I was at a paddle party for one of my mentors. He was a master guns, 30 years, in the Marine Corps. He was my platoon sergeant in Afghanistan. You know, very, very close friend. Almost like a father. And, you know, so we're at this event and again, I hear about this UDP opportunity and, you know, again, the other cool thing about being in the reserves is I was at the same company for 13 years, you know, deploying three times from that company with those guys, you know, and known the senior guys for my entire time in recon. So, you know, we're at this paddle party and we're drinking and then we hear about this opportunity. And I was like, I was like, hey, do you guys want to go do this? Like, I'm kind of itching to just go do something. I don't know what it is, you know? And they're like, yeah, fuck it. So yeah. all of us, you know, the senior guys, we all got together and we did it and, brought a bunch of young dudes with us and it was a great time, you know?
Was that Okinawa?
Yeah, just, you know, the Okinawa, Thailand, Philippines, that whole thing. Again, non-kinetic. It was a great opportunity, you know, professionally. And it was just good to go on another adventure, you know, with Recondos. So I had a great time, you know, doing that. But
hey, guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want. Because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview. How did you end up getting into recon? How did you end up doing that?
So in Camp Fallujah, there were posters to try out. And, one of my buddies who I went to cook school with, we were trying everything that we could to, you know, so now we got out of our cook units and now we're in this mortuary affairs unit. How do we get out of this unit and get over to the infantry? And one day I was in the internet tent and, or the phone center. And he comes up to me, he's like, "Hey man, what's your swim qual?" I was like, "Swim qual one." He's like, "Dude, let's try out for recon." I'm like, "Awesome. What is it?" And he's like, "You don't see those posters or whatever?" And I was like, "Yeah, like I didn't really like read them or whatever." He's like, "Well," he's like, "check it out." And, we like hop on a computer and he shows me, you know, this like moto video or whatever. And I was like, "Well, what do we need to do?" He's like, "Well, we need swim qual one, which we both have. We need first class PFTs, which we first have. And we need a 105 GT score." I'm like, "Well, what's a GT score?" And, you know, we're like dumb Lance Corporals. And so I get on MOL and dude, I had like a 94. And I was like, "Shit, well, I guess I can't do it." And he's like, "Why don't you just take the ASVAP again?" I was like, "Okay, let's do that." So we, you know, so he's like, "Well, we don't have to tell anyone that just yet." So we call the unit and they just moved from Billings, Montana to Atlanta, you know, higher population density, more people to recruit from, you know, so it made sense. So we called them and they were like, "Yeah, come on down, try out." So, I was like, "Well, shit, like they want us to come try out like the PT stuff. Like, I think I can handle that. But like, I need to be administratively able to do this." So, dude, I bought an ASVAP book, cause again, like when I joined, didn't know anything. I just took the test. They said, "Hey, you're good enough to do this." I said, "Okay." So it didn't mean anything to me. And, you know, retook the ASVAP. I got the score I needed. And then, you know, I went to the unit, did the recon indoc, and then went to recon Marines awaiting training. And that was kind of the, you know, that it was, I don't want to say as simple as it was, because I had to, you know, we had to request masks to get out of the unit. We had to transfer to the, you know, to the recon battalion. I had to retake the ASVAP, And we were living in Virginia at the time, and the unit was in Atlanta. And I remember having to sign the waiver, being like, yeah, like, we're willing to accept the cost of driving down there on our own, you know, 12-hour drive, just to see, like, if we could do this, you know, but wanted to do it and went and did it, you know?
And so once you did that, you know, I know there's a time period where you're probably in the unit before you go to school, and then you probably school up, right? And then what was that like for you? What was going through that process of getting qualified like for you?
So I was extremely lucky. Got back from Iraq, 21, no bills, 25 grand in the bank. And we had like 3 months before we could try out for this in-doc thing. Had no idea even what it was. They just said, hey, you need to be able to swim and do a PFT. I was like, okay, well, that sounds easy. So we got an apartment in Virginia, and we went to George Mason University. We got memberships there. They had a really awesome, like, Olympic-sized pool. And we needed a pool that was deep. That was the issue, right? We couldn't go to like a YMCA or whatever. Like, we needed a deep pool. So didn't get jobs. And like 6 days a week, it was wake up, hit the gym. We'd spend 5 or 6 hours there every day, just getting ready for this thing that we didn't even know what we had to do. So we would just do a bunch of ridiculous stuff in the pool, and then do a PFT. We just did that like every day, right? It's like a personal trainer's like worst dream, like not doing anything correct, just doing whatever, right? So went to the unit, you know, and it's a simple test. It's a swim qual, a modified swim qual, and a PFT. And you just need like a 285 PFT. And then they're like, yeah, cool, we'll bring you on. So did that, and immediately got sent to Recon Marines awaiting training, RMAT. It's been, you know, been called a bunch of different things over the years, but it's basically like a holding platoon before you go to recon school. So we actually, this was a pretty emotional time thinking about it now. So we drive from Atlanta to San Antonio, Texas. You know, it was like an 18-hour drive. We get there, and it's like 11:30 at night, and everyone in that recon platoon or the RMAT platoon, they're all sleeping except for the duty. We show up, and I remember seeing the sign, and it was like, you know, 4th Recon Battalion, Recon Marines awaiting training. Freedom isn't free. And I don't know why, but I just got chills like when I saw that sign outside the barracks. And it's this rundown small building on Fort Sam Houston. And so we go in and we start talking to the duty. I'm like, hey, I'm Lance Corporal Keevil. I'm here checking in. You know, and I was with like 4 or 5 other guys. Mm-hmm. And like, dude, these guys just start kind of like appearing from the racks because it was like a squad bay. And like, I just see these, like, they just looked really fucking mean, you know? but I didn't know that, you know, the way it worked at the time was the top 10 guys of that holding platoon would go to either ARS, you know, Amphib Recon School on the East Coast, or the Basic Reconnaissance Course on the West Coast. And it was like every 2.5 months, the top 10 guys would go. So it was extremely competitive. And everything was based off of your in-doc score. And then obviously, you know, some personality aspects would go into it. Like, is this dude cool or not? Like, is he a team player? Little things like that, but nothing official. And they had heard that we had high PFTs. And so we were like a threat. Like, as soon as they're like, fuck these dudes. I've been here for months, right?
Yeah.
So we show up, and every Monday was in-doc day. And, you know, when you get into this platoon and before you graduate recon school, you're called a roper, and you wear a black sling rope around your shoulders. And but if you failed the indoc, you didn't get kicked out right away, but you had to wear a red rope, and just to signify that like you failed. And if you were the worst of all the failures, you had to carry this big candy cane. It was like this big stick that they made look like a candy cane. And there was it was called the Candy Ass Creed. And you had to read this thing. Yeah. And it was like, I don't remember what it was, but it was like, you know, I'm a candy ass motherfucker. And it was, that stuff like that never happens nowadays. But yeah, if you were like the worst of the worst, you had to run around with this giant fuck off candy cane stick. Anyway, so dude, I only spent 3 weeks there. Extremely lucky. I know guys, some of my best friends, they were in this like purgatory for like 9 months, and you know, just brutal. Every day is just brutal. Cause not only are you competing for a spot, but I mean, they're actively trying to make you quit. So it would be just arbitrary shit. Like, we're just going to do pushups until someone quits. And all you're thinking is, you're like, fuck man. Like, everyone here is pretty tough. Like, I don't think anyone's going to quit. So we're just going to be doing this for a while. Right. and then someone quits, and then you're like, oh, thank goodness. But then it doesn't stop anyway. So it's like, you kind of learn you're just always a loser when you're a roper. So, you know, that's what it was like. So again, I was extremely lucky, went to recon school, passed, and then went back to, so this barracks was like split in half. On the one side, it was ropers, and then the other side was grads, right? And when you're a graduate, you know, you're walking around in your amphib recon, like schoolhouse, like black hoodie and sweatpants, and no one messed with you, and you're OFP, own fucking program. You do whatever you want. You just had to be ready for, you know, jump school, dive school, SEER school, and then you would get sent back to your unit. So that's what life was like as a grad, and I mean, it was pretty awesome. Kind of just did your own thing.
That sounds great. So you do that, you go back to your unit, and then you guys deployed, right, from there?
So got back to my unit, and I got a girl pregnant. And,
oh, man.
Yeah. And I didn't have a job. I would just be like a bum at the reserve unit. And sometimes you got paid, sometimes you didn't. Mm-hmm. And now I get this girl pregnant. I'm like, shit, like I need... mainly like insurance, right? Mm-hmm. Because they wouldn't pay you for over 30 days. Because if they paid you for over 30 days, they would have to pay you other benefits and entitlements. But if they kept it at like 28, 29 days, then they wouldn't have to. But I mean, you know, when you're 22 and you have no bills, you know, it's whatever.
Right.
So I got a random email from OneMeth. Being like, hey, we're standing up this new unit. We're looking for volunteers, to go to South America. And I was like, fuck it, I'm in. So, I got on with that unit, and it was a trainer advisor group, in Virginia Beach, which coincidentally they took over the compound for the East Coast Recon School when that shut down and everything was consolidated in California. So it was pretty cool to see the old schoolhouse while I was there. But you know, so I went and did that for almost 2 years. That was awesome. I learned a lot. But you know, I learned a lot as far as not being that typical like super cocky young recon dude. And that's what I was, in the beginning. And, you know, one of my mentors, his name was Zeb. He was a former sniper, on active duty, and then came to the reserves. You know, we went to RMAT together, went to recon school together, and now we're doing this thing together. And I was frustrated about something, and I'm like, why the fuck don't they listen to me? And I was a corporal at the time. And he's like, dude, look at you. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, bro, you have like gunny sleeves, turbo low hair, you're wearing fucking Oakley boots, and you're wearing starch white camis from Iraq. Like, you look like no one's going to take you seriously looking like that. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. Right. So, you know, like a child. So I go to the PX, I buy brand new everything. I get a fucking medium fade. And then like I show, and dude, it was so crazy. This is how indoctrinated the Marine Corps is. I show up to work on Monday and like all of a sudden everyone's like taking my advice and listening to my recommendations and stuff. and I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. But the bigger lesson that I learned from that is, you know, the whole know your audience thing, right? Like, right. I'm not, and what for young recondos, I think the best opportunity for them is deploying outside of a recon unit, early on, sooner the better, in my opinion, because it really shows you like one, how good it is at recon, even at recon battalion, how good it is. And, you know, play the game to ultimately, again, get what you want. You know, so I did that for a while.
No, that's important. I mean, your appearance is everything. I mean, and you might not think it. You might think, okay, well, I can do this. I've got these capabilities and things like that. But, you know, people do judge you by your looks. They judge, and not just in the Marine Corps, in civilian world, in any place you walk into. If you look like a bag of dicks, then you're going to get treated like one, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you don't even think about it. Like in the civilian world, like walking around in a suit, you wouldn't think your shoes and your watch mean something, but they do. Right. So don't skimp out on a good pair of shoes and a nice watch when you got to rock a suit. But
big time. Yeah, that's one of the first things you should invest in. I know we're coming up on time. I want to get into your work with Recon Sniper Foundation. What is the foundation and what do you do with them?
So the Recon Sniper Foundation provides assistance to veterans, and their families and active duty service members. Like basically anyone that comes out to us, requests, assistance. Our main target, you know, is the reconnaissance and scout sniper communities. But it's evolved over the years to all veterans. And, so a couple years ago, three years ago, I got into competitive shooting and I was in a funk, and, competitive shooting really helped me work through, you know, a lot of issues that I was having, you know, that we talked about earlier. You know, everything from the, you know, the deployments to, you know, being let down by various commands, you know, just personal, relationship friction. Right. So the competitive shooting really helped me focus on myself. You know, a couple of my good friends, got into it as well. And, they got on with, the board for Recon Sniper Foundation. They said, "Hey, do you want to start a shooting team?" I said, "Yeah, I think that's awesome. Like, this has helped me out a lot. And I know it's helped out, you know, a couple other guys too." So the concept was get recon dudes and scout snipers into shooting sports. And something weird happened. Like, not as many guys from those small niche communities really wanted to get into competitive shooting, you know, for a number of reasons. But
is this like three gun? Is this three gun, or is it shooting for distance? What type of competition?
So it's everything. It is, so as far as pistol, it would be something like USPSA or IDPA or Steel Challenge Association or bullseye shooting, any sort of competitive shooting. So, I mean, archery, skeet shooting, long gun, you know, whether it's, you know, the 22 rifle precision shooting, or, you know, the heavier calibers, three gun. It doesn't matter. Like, if it was shooting a projectile at something, like, I wanted to support you going and doing that. And from there it evolved, to, you know, so as it evolved, my vision of what the team should or could be changed as well. And so my grandmaster plan is to encompass like any competitive event, right? So we just launched Team Endurance earlier this year, which is, you know, endurance athletes. But even that within the last 3 or 4 months has evolved from, you know, like its focus being Ironmans and, you know, marathons, ultra marathons and things like that to MMA, to people who just want to get back into CrossFit or just get back into working out. So it just kind of worked out really well. The whole, you know, we call it Team Endurance, and the RSF motto for 2020 is endure, you know? And that just kind of happened. It wasn't that portion of it wasn't planned. And it just seemed to fit really well. Also like who we bring on to help support, changed as well. And so a lot of people don't know this, like that recon battalion, you know, force reconnaissance companies and scout sniper platoons. We support a lot of, a lot of entities, a lot of units, you know, all the way from the MEF, you know, to a infantry platoon, you know, so and everyone in between. Now, I'll be the first to say this: both, you know, recon and snipers, we're bougie, right? We require a lot of support and help to do what we want to do, but in turn, we are supporting everyone as well. And that mentality was brought into RSF as an organization, and then also team, and also the teams. So, you know, we're open to all veterans of all generations, all types, all services. But, you know, because we are the Recon Sniper Foundation, when you, you know, participate with us for a certain period of time, like, you rate a personalized memorial jersey. And our rule is it has to be a recon dude or a sniper, because you know that is our main organization. So that's how it's evolved over the years. And that's actually how I met Patrick.
One of our mutual, you know, friends. So you guys run these shooting events, right? And so how do you get involved with this? So number one, do you need to own a firearm? Do you have to bring your own? Are they provided? If you're getting into something like three gun, and I know some of the gear is pretty expensive. Does the organization help with that, or?
Yes. So we've set up, we did one last year. We're planning on doing another this year, and we would like it to be like a 2 to 3 time a year, thing going forward. So it's, you know, it'll be a shooting clinic. And the last one we did, we were able to provide, pistols and precision rifles, to the shooters that wanted to come on. And so it was like a 1 day clinic and then a 1 day match. And they would, you know, each shooter was paired up with a guy who competes regularly to like learn the sport, you know, an introduction to, the sport. So for big events like that, we try to provide, you know, what we can. So you just show up and we'll show you the sport. Other than that, like I had to take a big reset, or take a step back from the team. So we have over 100, you know, athletes involved in the team, and, you know, so that's awesome, right? It's been growing, it continues to grow, but, I needed to find a way to, one, give back more to the people that we have, and also incentivize them more. 'Cause that's the common trend that I see. You know, shooters will come on, they're like, okay, this is pretty cool. You know, we invest time and money into them, and then they leave, you know. And, you know, I'm not upset that they leave. Like, I think that it was overall a good experience for them coming on, but you know, again, I'm trying to build a community out of it. And I was talking to the endurance captain, Josh Cruz, last night about it. I think Team Endurance will be the flagship team. It just, you know, the pistol and precision rifle thing started first. So we provide assistance if you want to get interested in the sport, and we do the best that we can to set up events, to pair someone up, to learn, you know, the sport that they specifically want to get into.
That's pretty awesome, man. That's pretty awesome. And is there a geographic location where most of your events occur? Is it mostly on the East Coast? Do you do it nationwide or?
So we have shooters all over the place. Obviously the big areas. So, you know, Southern California, the East Coast, and then kind of, the Texas area where we have the bulk of our shooters. We did the first event in 29 Palms, California. We are currently setting up a event on the East Coast in the New England area right now. We started planning for that. I was planning on doing something in Texas this spring, but some things fell through and I had to push that event to the right. So, we're doing the best that we can to find areas that would be the easiest for the most people to get to.
Nice, nice. And where can people go if they want to sign up for something like this?
We're in the process of redoing our website right now. So I think the easiest way would be either on Instagram, either Recon Sniper Foundation or Team RSF, Team Recon Sniper Foundation. Mm-hmm. If you shoot us a DM on there, it's going to be me or one of the other guys who responds. Again, like I said before, I'm doing a big administrative like reshuffle and really focusing inboard on the guys that we have, but before I start really opening it back up to everyone else, obviously people who come on, like, I'll respond to you the best that I can. I'll get you the information that you want about whatever sport that you want to get into, but I'm really trying to focus on the shooters that we have right now.
Okay, man. Awesome. Awesome. And what we'll do is we'll get a link to your Instagram up on the show notes for this episode. Number one, I just want to acknowledge you, man. Number one, thank you for your service. Number two, thanks for some of the lessons you brought here today. I mean, as far as navigating your career and having the interesting career that you did, and are still currently in, I think that's helpful for a lot of guys out there who might feel stuck where they are. And then, thank you for what you're doing with Team Recon Sniper and getting people involved and active in their own ways. So that's awesome work you're doing, brother.
No, I appreciate it. And thank you for, the opportunity. Jared, hold on, bud. Sorry, my son came
it's all good, man.
But my hands are cold. Sorry. Thank you for the opportunity. This wouldn't have happened if I didn't meet Patrick. Wouldn't have met Patrick if I didn't, try to start getting this team off the ground. And that's what it's all about. It's all about relationships. So,
awesome, man. Awesome. Well, to everybody out there, thank you for listening. I hope that you found this episode helpful. Like I said, we'll get the links up on the show notes if you guys want to get involved in this. And then beyond that, we'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. This is Chris and Mike, and we are out. All right, guys. So that was my conversation with Mike Keevil of Team Recon Sniper. Like I said, I just like to sit here and talk with other Marines. That's kind of what this show is about. That and delivering tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas to you guys to help you to move forward. And some of the things you might have learned from there is that you got to take the initiative. If you want something for your life, if you are looking to advance your career, whether you're in the military or if you're out of the military, you've got to be on it. It's got to come through your actions. You can't just sit there and wait for it. Mike had a vision of what he wanted from the Marine Corps, and he went out there and he went after it. The other thing is this, there are so many amazing resources out there for you guys, for those of you who have served. Over 433,000 501c3 organizations here in the United States, and Team Recon Sniper is one of them. And so when we bring these tools to you guys, I hope that you're taking advantage of them. I hope you're checking out Team Recon Sniper. I hope you're checking out the teams that they have. And I hope that you're heading to some of those events because they are absolutely outstanding. I definitely want to take advantage of it the next time they come out here to 29 Palms. I think that would be awesome. As far as everything goes, you know, I hope you guys are getting a lot out of these episodes. I get notes all the time from veterans and from active duty military guys who say that this podcast has made a world of difference in their lives. And I want to keep hearing from all of you. Are we doing a good job? Am I doing a decent job of interviewing? I know I stumble over my words a lot. I'm trying to work on that. I'm trying to get better at it. But I hope you guys are getting a lot out of the content that we have here. And if you are, listen, I don't care if you ever buy a thing from Warrior Soul. I don't care if you ever spend a dime. But if you can, please spread the word about these episodes. Please spread the word about the show. And you do that in a number of ways. You can share these episodes out with friends. You can tell your friends about the show. You can head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. That helps us so much to get shown up in the iTunes algorithm. It helps the show to rise in the rankings. And it helps me to get this information into the ears of more veterans. So if you could do that for me, that'd be amazing. And other ways you can support the show and support yourself, you can get yourself an amazing shirt from warriorsoul.shop. We've got some awesome skivvy shirts, some really awesome graphic design shirts. And then beyond that, we also have warriorsoul.academy. That's got a lot of my fitness programs up there. I've got a lot of stuff you could do from home. We're, as of the recording right now, still going through the coronavirus crisis. Everybody's doing their social distancing. And if you're looking for something to keep you in shape during that time period, well, head over to warriorsoul.academy. We've got some great books on nutrition, some great courses that you can take advantage of, and some great courses on building a business if that's what you're into. Beyond that, we also have our mastermind that I talked to you about in the middle of the show. That is the Warriors Obituary Society. We do have customizing of programs, fitness programs in that development program. So what happens is every new member goes through an 8-week development program. And during that program, they are figuring out what vision they want to live, getting really clear about what they want out of life. And then you start to get real specific. You start to figure out how to customize your own fitness plan, your own personal finance plan. Start to get focused on your career, your business, and your relationships. We've got a private forum up here on Slack. We don't do anything over social media because I don't want anybody looking over your shoulder, and I don't want you getting distracted by a bunch of BS that's up there on Facebook and some of these other platforms. So if you want to check that out, www.warriorobituarysociety.com. Once again, it is my great honor to serve you as the host of this podcast. I hope you're getting a lot out of it. Please let me know if you are. And with that, get out there, live your best life while you can. This is Chris Albert, and I am out.